Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Being plus size and pregnant in today's world can be difficult, but despite the scary medical statistics, overweight moms-to-be are having healthy pregnancies and happy babies every day. So what's the truth behind being plus size and pregnant? Are you really more at risk? I'm Dr. Ray Kamali, an OBGYN affiliated with Sharp Chula Vista Medical Center, and this is Preggy Pals, episode 35.
Is that a plus sign?
Pink or blue?
Hospital or home birth?
What type of food should I be eating?
I think I just peed myself.
I'm pregnant and I have to exercise.
What pregnancy glow?
Wait, was that a contraction?
Gotta make these pants fit.
I've got kinkles.
What do you mean there's more than one?
You've got the symptoms and now you've got the support you need for a happy 9 months. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way. Welcome to Preggy Pals, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I am your host, Sunny Galt. Are you a member of the Preggy Pals Club? Our members have access to all of our archived episodes, plus bonus material after every new show, and special giveaways and discounts. To sign up, visit our website, preggypals.com. All right, so let's meet our panelists. Stephanie, kick us off.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Saufeld. I am 29. I'm a gemologist, and I'm currently pregnant with my first child, a baby girl, and we're having a hospital birth.
And I'm Elisa Suter. I am a wedding planner. I'm 20, not 29. No, I'm 32. And I'm pregnant with my first child, who is also a daughter. And we are also planning a hospital birth.
And I think that's new for our listeners, because you didn't know what you were having
exactly.
Last time.
We found out on Thanksgiving with our
Yay!
Yeah, it was exciting. We did a little mini gender reveal.
Aww. That's wonderful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Before we begin today's episode, here's Jennifer Durbin with some pregnancy tips for the clueless chick.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Durbin, the author of Pregnancy Tips for the Clueless Chick and mother of two wonderful little boys. I'd love to share with you my secrets for surviving the 10 to 45 minute feedings you'll have every 2 to 3 hours the first few weeks of baby's life. Whether you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding, be prepared to spend hours upon hours glued to the couch feeding the baby. With my must-have nursing basket, you'll have everything you need to survive, I mean enjoy, all of that time. So grab a cute little basket and add these 10 must-haves. Number 1, an It's Been or stopwatch app for timing the length of each feeding and the time between feedings, because it's so easy to lose track of time. 2, a water bottle and snack for yourself, because you can get very thirsty and hungry while nursing. 3, ibuprofen or any prescription medication you're taking during your recovery. 4, a suction bulb and infant saline nose drops, because it's easiest to suction baby's nose while she's eating. 5, hand sanitizer and your favorite hand lotion, because you can't be too germ-free in the first few weeks, and your poor overwashed hands need extra attention. 6, infant gas drops or gripe water if baby has reflux or painful gas. 7, nipple cream to apply after each feeding. 8, a burp cloth for the inevitable spit-ups and spills. 9, your phone to catch up on phone calls and check email. And 10, a good book or the remote so that you can do a little something for yourself while playing wet nurse. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the quiet time with your little one. And don't forget to pump from time to time so that your partner can experience the joys of feeding time as well. For more great tips, visit cluelesschick.com.
All right, today's topic was suggested by you, the listeners. How does pregnancy differ for plus-size women? Our expert today is Dr. Ray Kamali, an OBGYN affiliated with Sharp Chula Vista Medical Center, where he's also the chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Dr. Kamali, welcome to Preggy Pals.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, absolutely. At what point is a woman considered obese, and how is that measured?
We use the terms overweight and obese really in our conversations on a day-to-day basis, but the most clinically relevant definition of obesity and overweight comes from a number that we determine by called body mass index, or BMI, and that's calculated by taking a patient's weight in kilograms and dividing that by their height in meters squared. Most people don't know their weight in kilograms or height by meter squared. So if you don't want to do all the math, you can just do an internet search for, you know, how to calculate your BMI. And there's multiple websites that you can go on, put in your weight and your height and feet and pounds, and that'll calculate it out for you.
Okay. And how accurate is BMI in calculating someone's overall health and figuring out if they are a healthy person?
Well, you know, BMI is an estimation of a patient's average body fat, but it's not a perfect number or perfect science. So usually a clinician will look at your health and the total picture, and hopefully in a preconception visit, if you're able to see the doctor before you're pregnant, and they'll take everything into consideration, but BMI is just part of that picture.
Now, Dr. Kamali, yes. I know that BMI is very useful, but is it possible for somebody to have a high BMI and still be healthy?
Absolutely. BMI is just part of the picture, so we take that into consideration. But you know, we look at the patient's general health picture, looking at their pre-gestational health, meaning their we assess them for diabetes, for high blood pressure, and just for overall health. And again, BMI is just part of it. But yes, absolutely, we have many patients that have higher BMIs that do do significantly better than normal BMI patients. So that is just part of it. Yes.
Okay. Why does weight matter in pregnancy? I mean, we put a lot of focus, I think, on weight. Okay. Even if we come into a pregnancy having, whatever, average BMI. Okay. We think about the weight we're going to gain. But why overall, if we know we're going to gain weight, why does it really matter? We're gaining weight no matter what, right? Why
Absolutely.
Is it important?
Well, your pre-gestational or pre-pregnancy weight determines the risks or some adverse outcomes that you may face during your pregnancy. So if you are overweight or obese, you have a slightly increased risk of developing some medical problems or complications during your pregnancy and also in your postpartum period. So as the BMI increases, the risk of those adverse outcomes increase. So it is important to determine the BMI and the weight, and also just so that we can look for those possible complications or adverse outcomes, and also try to reduce or manage the risks.
Maybe could we go into a couple of those risks? And it would be nice to actually hear how much of an increased risk, because I think that a lot of times being overweight or obese, women hear, oh my gosh, you have this huge risk. And really, the vast majority of women who are overweight or obese actually are able to have healthy pregnancies and healthy babies.
Absolutely. So, we can actually just break down those risks for preconception or, trying to conceive, and then to, the risks during pregnancy, risks during labor, and then the postpartum risks, and also risks to the baby. So, again, as you mentioned, sometimes we talk about risks, but unless you put a real number to it, it's kind of difficult to assess or understand exactly what the risks are. So let's start off with risks of having difficulty conceiving, or what we call subfertility or sometimes infertility. So our patients with higher BMI, and mostly obese patients, but sometimes overweight patients. And just for the purpose of our conversation, it's good to kind of define what overweight and obesity is. So we talked about BMI and how to calculate it, and then we basically look at the patient's BMI. If the patient's between 18, BMI of 18 to 25, they're considered to have a normal BMI. And that's the Institute of Medicine and World Health Organization definition. So 18 to 25 is considered to be normal. Between 25 to just under 30, or 29.9, is considered to be overweight, and over 30 is considered to be obese. So then we basically look at our patient's BMI, and you know, we put them in that classification of overweight or obese, and that sort of helps us also determine their risks. But risks of miscarriage with our obese patients with BMI over 30 is increased by twofold in our in those patients. Now, sometimes patients that are obese also have difficulty getting pregnant, and that comes from, you know, patients that are obese have a higher risk of developing polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is having problem ovulating, and that, you know, obviously it would pose a difficulty, you know, getting pregnant. So patients with PCOS have difficulty getting pregnant, weight loss can help you ovulate and get pregnant.
Do you have any actual like numbers, percentages?
Sure.
About, because I know that you said it increases twofold, but that, you know, if the actual percentage for regular infertility might be whatever the percent, it might be a lot smaller than it sounds, because it sounds really scary. Oh my gosh, I have twice as much a probability of actually having a miscarriage. Can you go into that a little
sure.
bit?
Sure. Risk of miscarriage is pretty high in general population. There's an estimation that 1 in 3 pregnancies end up in early miscarriage. Now, sometimes people don't really have a diagnosis of miscarriage because they're a week or two late for their period, and then they just have a period and they never take a pregnancy test. So they know, you know, they don't know they were pregnant and they miscarried. Increasing that, you know, by twofold, that sometimes does increase your risk somewhere around 40 to 50%, but that's just in obese patients with BMIs of over 30, we're gonna just kind of use that as a segue to go into the actual pregnancy complication, and those are basically complications that a mom is diagnosed with or faces during their pregnancy, and one of the more serious ones is diabetes. Now, there's a patient may develop gestational diabetes. That's developing diabetes during their pregnancy, and that any pregnant woman has a chance of developing diabetes. And patients with higher BMI have a slightly elevated chance of developing gestational diabetes. So, in a general population, the risk of developing gestational diabetes is somewhere in 2 to 6% range, and with overweight and obesity, that goes up between 6 to 12%. So, it is elevated by threefold. But diabetes, a patient may also have diabetes before they actually conceive or become pregnant. Now, one of the things is that we see the patients for the first time. A lot of patients, whether obese or overweight or normal weight, see the doctor for the first time when they're pregnant. So they've been healthy all their life, or they haven't had any medical issues, so they haven't seen a doctor. So a lot of times we see the patient for the first time when they're pregnant. So what we sometimes do is screen patients for diabetes in the first trimester or the first visit, and to see if they have pre-gestational diabetes. So if a patient does have elevated sugars or elevated glucose tolerance before 20 weeks, they're considered to be pre-gestational diabetes, diabetic, meaning that they had diabetes before they actually got pregnant. With gestational diabetes or pre-gestational diabetes, there are some increased risk of developing other complications. You know, some of those we were talking about in the green room or the waiting room was macrosomia, having a larger baby, and sometimes larger babies pose some difficulty with labor, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Sometimes placental insufficiency causing a slightly increased risk of stillbirth, and sometimes smaller babies. Aside from the diabetes, there's also an increased risk of developing pregnancy-associated hypertension. That's a special type of high blood pressure that people develop in pregnancy. And the risk is increased by 1.5 times. So putting that in real numbers, the risk of a woman in normal population to develop gestational or pregnancy-induced high blood pressure is about 10%. And with obesity and being overweight, that's increased by 1.5-fold, so somewhere around 15 to 20%. But And that's just basically developing high blood pressure in pregnancy, and sometimes that can be more complicated. Sometimes you can develop preeclampsia, which is when the blood pressure starts affecting some of the other organs like the kidneys and the liver and the brain and sometimes the baby. And then there's other things like developing bladder infections. It's been found that patients that are overweight and obese have a fourfold increase in risk developing UTIs, but that's easily managed by checking and treating. Risk of having post-term deliveries. Sorry, ladies. You don't want to go over 42 weeks, but sometimes you can go over 42 weeks. And also risk of, they have looked at if there is an actual increased risk of preterm deliveries, and there is no real increased risk of preterm deliveries, but sometimes with the complications like high blood pressure, like diabetes, like preeclampsia, you may need to deliver the baby early. So sometimes we deliver those babies a little bit earlier because of the complications of pregnancy, but the actual obesity is not a real risk, for preterm deliveries.
So basically, I know that there are definitely risks,
sure.
But I think it's good for people to actually hear that there's a really good statistical chance that you'll be just fine.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that from the perspective of someone who does fall into that higher BMI category, not crazy high BMI category, but higher BMI category, a lot of times we hear constantly from our doctors, our nurses, et cetera. And I had shared some things with you outside.
Absolutely.
You have to be extremely vigilant, and you're definitely going to get gestational diabetes.
Absolutely.
And all these things. And I think it's really important for women who are in that higher BMI category to just be aware that yes, there is an increased risk, but it's not dire. It's not, you're not definitely going to get this.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned this, because the purpose of this discussion and this talk is to increase the awareness and just to look out for and know the risks. But what we want to do is by mentioning these risks is to be able to manage and to diagnose these conditions better by encouraging patients to come and see their doctor, hopefully preconception before they get pregnant, and just evaluate their medical risks and medical conditions before they get pregnant, and also during their pregnancy to come in early, because sometimes patients are just scared of going to the doctor and being told all those things, so they just avoid doctors, and we just want to encourage patients to come in early, get tested, and so we can look out for those things. And through various counseling and various things, we can help patients have a healthy pregnancy. But absolutely, we have most of our patients that are that fall in overweight and higher BMI categories do great and have healthy pregnancies. And that's at the end. That's what we're after. Just quickly, I wanted to also touch on some. We're not trying to scare patients, but some possible complications during labor, and then also possible perinatal complications, meaning complications to the baby. Just quickly, there is a slightly elevated risk of having longer labors. That's just something that they have found, looking at patients that are fall into the higher BMI categories and the length of the labors. Risk of having a difficult epidural, or having an epidural that doesn't completely function or work well, meaning the patient may have some discomfort, and also slightly higher, higher C-section rates in patients that are in the BMI over 30 category. After the delivery, there's risk of a longer hospital stay. Sometimes that is because the patients end up with C-sections and have to stay in a hospital longer, but also sometimes because there are complications like increased risk of infection, especially in presence of diabetes, and increased risk of bleeding. And sometimes if a patient had a larger or for gestational age baby or a macrosomic baby, sometimes they have more trauma to their perineum, and sometimes they stay in a hospital slightly longer. So those are some risks of both, labor and also postpartum.
Now, Dr. Kamali, I do have a question about
that,
what you just said. I know that there's an increased risk of C-section and an increased risk of longer labor when you induce.
Okay.
And I've read a lot of statistics that say that higher BMI women get induced earlier oftentimes, or have much, much higher rates of induction. In fact, I read one study that said that the rate of induction for normal weight women was 27%, around 27%.
Absolutely.
And the rate of induction for obese women was over 50.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you could maybe explain to us why that might be. And I know that you know, there are certainly reasons why certain women might be induced, but it seems like it's an extremely high number.
So there's multiple factors. One is, you know, as we mentioned, sometimes medical complications may make it necessary to induce a patient. For example, if they're developing preeclampsia or severe preeclampsia at certain gestational ages, we recommend, you know, the delivery because, you know, the baby's better off being delivered than staying in an environment with a higher blood pressure. You know, sometimes with diabetes, we may notice that the baby is not growing appropriately, and sometimes we induce. So there are certain medical conditions that necessitate induction, and, you know, those, you know, basically are important. And then we also talked about an increased risk of, you know, patients going over 42 weeks. And sometimes we actually do wait sometimes up to 43 weeks if a patient's well dated. And that also kind of touches on the importance of early prenatal care. If you have early sonograms, your dates are accurate. You may not really be, you know, post dates. You may just have an accurate due date. But if you do have an accurate due date and you are, you know, past 43 weeks or sometimes 42 weeks, you know, we do induce your labor because there is increased risks of, you know, stillbirth and other complications, you know, for post-term pregnancies. So sometimes that is a reason we induce patients. And then the risks of C-section for macrosomic babies also, as we mentioned, higher BMI patients have a higher risk of having large for gestational age or macrosomic babies. And sometimes those babies just, you know, are, you know, basically, you know, are not a woman is not able to deliver those babies because they're just larger, and that necessitates a C-section also. You know, there's multiple factors associated with, you know, the induction and C-section. But absolutely, if we can avoid an induction, especially on a patient that's, you know, it's their first baby and their cervix is not, you know, it's not ripe or dilated, then we'd prefer to wait.
So how can all of these risks be reduced? Obviously, you're not going to ask a pregnant woman to lose weight.
Right.
So how... You know, with all these risks, what can a woman do to make sure or to try and avoid
these
risks?
Yeah, that's a great question. Once a patient walks into our office and they're pregnant, as you mentioned, we can't, you know, ask them to go on a diet, but we want them to go on a healthy diet, meaning not to lose weight, but to consume the appropriate amount of calories so that they don't gain an excess amount of weight during their pregnancy. And also to, you know, we kind of educate them about the right, you know, the right type of calories or carbohydrates and, you know, avoiding empty carbs, you know, stuff like just, you know, prepared sugar or, you know, just, you know, chocolate desserts, all those sodas and juices.
Everything
all
we
the
crave.
Good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
and then also sometimes we're able to refer them to a nutritionist or a dietitian that can help them choose. Because, you know, what we do is we sometimes talk to these patients, and some patients are very well informed and they have tried various different things, and some people just don't have any idea about what is good and what isn't good. And so we try to gauge their knowledge and also just refer them to nutritionists and dietitians, and just stress the importance of prenatal care and just closer supervision. So sometimes with diabetics and high blood pressure and other complications, we start monitoring a mom by educating about fetal kick counts, and also that's counting the baby's movements every night just to make sure that the baby's moving and active. And then also somewhere around 32 to 34 weeks, we sometimes start doing a little bit more intense monitoring by doing what's called NSTs or non-stress tests, by having a mom come into the hospital or the office, and we just monitor baby's activity and heart rate and sometimes the contractions also, just to see if the baby's doing well. And then, you know, with sonogram, we can also assess various things like growth and fluid index. And so we just, monitor these moms a little closer than, you know, normal weight moms, just to make sure that they have a positive outcome and healthy baby.
Yeah, I had to do some of that actually with my second pregnancy. I had gestational diabetes, but it was something that wasn't the test that you take at, what, 24 weeks or something like that. That was inconclusive. Like, I can't remember at the time. I didn't have all of the markers, but it was borderline gestational diabetes. Yes. And then they said, oh, guess what? You get to come back and take this 3-hour test again. And then I did that, and then I was over. They said most of the time when you are initially marked as having a borderline gestational diabetes, it usually falls into gestational diabetes later. So I remember you were talking about the non-stress tests and stuff, and that was something that I had to do. But it was kind of nice on one end. I mean, it was a commitment, but at the same time, it was nice to see the baby more often and hear his heartbeat and go through that whole thing.
Well, but also gestational diabetes isn't just BMI isn't just the only risk factor for gestational diabetes. In fact, one of my friends was quite underweight and had gestational diabetes.
Diet,
genetics.
I learned that when I went to my first class for gestational diabetes. I was like, wow, there's a plethora of different types of people in here. I wasn't sure what to expect, When we come back, we'll talk about ways plus-size moms can discuss their health with their medical providers. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Today we're talking about plus-size pregnancy. Dr. Ray Kamali is an OBGYN, and he is joining us now here in our studio to tell us a little bit more about it. So, Dr. Kamali, what advice do you have for plus-size moms whose medical providers aren't as sensitive to their situations?
It's an interesting question. I personally didn't really know that this existed, and last night also I was looking at some blogs in preparation for this, and it seems to be a big problem. You know, there's a lot of patients complaining about their healthcare providers because, sometimes the providers trying to educate their patients, sometimes they're scaring them or they're not being sensitive to the patient. So, I guess the first step would be to try to actually talk to your provider and just, kind of make them aware of it. Sometimes in some practices, there's other providers or other practitioners, so you certainly can switch to the other providers. Or sometimes you can also ask your friends or your family members who have had babies or who are pregnant to see if they like their OBGYN or their provider or their nurse practitioner or PA. And if they're happy with their care, you can also switch to another provider, because it is difficult. You know, there's no real directory which says these are patients, physicians that are sensitive to your weight. It's just kind of like shopping for anything else. And shopping for doctors is also very difficult, even when you're not pregnant. Sometimes you walk in and, you may love your doctor and you may not. You just have to be able to bond and be able to, to relate to your doctor and vice versa.
Why do you think that is, though, that some doctors are not as sensitive as they should be? I mean, is it because I'm just thinking, from an outsider's point of view that, you're trained to try to make people, quote unquote, healthy, and you're trying to fix something that you think is broken. I mean, is that what we're seeing?
Absolutely. Well, having this conversation today about all the risks, and, in medical school for, a number of years, we're just drilled about all the risks of, obesity or overweight and, high blood pressure and diabetes and various different disease. You always look at the risk factors, and being overweight is a risk factor for a lot of various different conditions that we study. So people are just automatically just trained to think that you're overweight, you're obese, you just need to lose the weight and you'll be fine. So why can't you do it? And it's a lot more complicated than that. And also we also realize that we need to be able to offer solutions, and you can't just ask a patient to go lose some weight and you'll be better.
Especially once you're pregnant. Absolutely. You don't want them to do that.
Absolutely.
Can I share my little story? And this is very short. This is very shortened. But I was talking to my midwife about the idea of not doing the gestational diabetes drink and actually just pricking my finger, because I usually have low blood sugar and wanted to make sure that I wasn't sick for 3 or 4 days after taking that horrible, nasty sugar drink. I suggested to her, this is what I want to do. And she turned to me and said, well, I don't understand how someone can get to your size without liking sugar.
Oh my God.
And my husband, who is very, very small, very slender, turned to me, and he had eyes about the size of saucers, because he knows that he eats at least 3 or 4 times as much sugar per day as I do. And I I usually have a very good diet. I have lots. I exercise lots. I've been very healthy all the way through my pregnancy and before. And it was just such a slap in the face that someone would assume that I had terrible eating habits and that I was just a sloth.
Yeah.
Because I happened to have a higher BMI. And I think that a lot of people get this from a lot of medical providers. And you get this assumption that you're just lazy and you're not doing anything right. And you aren't listening to me because, of course, you wouldn't know if you were eating badly because you're fat. You don't know. And I think that it's important for people, for overweight women, to think about, okay, well, do I actually want to be with this medical provider who's insulting me? I mean, yes, obviously, you want to make sure that you're eating healthfully and that you're exercising and that you're doing all these things. But if there's a constant kind of harping on you to, okay, well, you need to, you know, watch those carbs or whatever it is, which I've heard as well. You kind of go, okay, well, why are they harping on me? It's just because I'm a little bit bigger naturally than somebody else. There are a lot of other factors to weigh.
Right.
So some great news about the diabetes screening test. I just read a small study about jelly beans, so you can do that with like 10 jelly beans instead
really?
Of taking that really
like
nasty drink.
Beans.
Yeah, so you can actually enjoy your diabetes screening test.
That's nice. I wish that they would have given me that option.
I don't think those words have ever been in the same sentence. Enjoy your diabetes screening test.
Are there specific challenges for healthcare providers with a plus-size pregnancy? So we're talking about it from the plus-size person's perspective, but how about healthcare providers?
There's a lot of education that's involved. And again, like I said, you know, we have a spectrum of patients that are completely uneducated about what they eat or drink, and to patients that are completely educated and are exercising and, you know, they know about their pregnancies and the risk. So part of the challenge is trying to educate your patients. But part of the challenge is non-compliance. I mean, sometimes, you know, we have patients that have struggled with their weight throughout the pregnancy, and the last thing they want, to hear from us is, you know, that we're going to refer them to a nutritionist or a dietitian, or that they need to, to eat better or eat healthy.
It's like, oh, one more thing I gotta do while I'm pregnant or whatever. Right?
Absolutely.
Is there anything logistical as far as the equipment that you would be using or anything like that that would be affected?
Yeah, it's also interesting because last night when I was going through some of the blogs, I kind of read a blog, and I forget which website it was, which came from a patient's perspective of walking into an office. So they said, you know, when you first walk into an office, you look, and sometimes the chairs are not accommodating to a higher BMI patient. So right away, you already feel like, you know, I gotta stand up because I can't sit in any of your chairs. And other patients are looking at you, why is this person standing? And then also sometimes the receptionist, just walking into the receptionist and how their attitude is towards you. And then going into to be weighed, the scale, does the scale, go up to a certain amount, or is the platform kind of small to fit onto? And then the blood pressure cuff, if they don't have a larger blood pressure cuff, and then the size of the table, and then also those horrible gowns that we always give our patients, and they're the one size fits all, as Stephanie mentioned earlier, and sometimes you just can't, it's weird, it's difficult for people to fit into, and then it just doesn't cover any of their So there is a lot of things that, I reading that opened my eyes too, because, we just, go to a patient's room and we really don't think about these things. Definitely there's those things that, that patients notice.
That blood pressure cuff thing actually happened to me.
Really?
For years, I was getting diagnosed as having high blood pressure. And I kept saying, why do I have high blood pressure? This makes no sense. And I finally they finally used a larger cuff on me, and I'm right on the borderline. I actually measured my arm, and different blood pressure cuffs have different circumferences.
Okay.
But generally speaking, you can find the number online of how big your arm should be. And I was actually measured with a regular size versus normal size, or versus large size.
Okay.
Blood pressure cuff. And, at one of my, prenatal appointments, and they accidentally measured me with the regular size cuff, and then 5 minutes later realized it and said, oh wait, let's measure you with a large cuff, and the difference was over 30 points.
Oh my goodness.
I would have been putting me on blood pressure medication. And it wasn't that much tighter. It didn't feel that much tighter. It wasn't something that I would have commented on prior to actually having been measured with the large cuff. But I mean, it was, I think it was 147 over 110 or something. I mean, that was, and that was scary to me. I went, oh my gosh, what happened? And then later on, it was 110.
Yeah. If your blood pressure wasn't up then, it sure was after.
Yeah. And later on, it was 110 over 70 or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it was just,
I told her she was just allergic to OBGYNs. That's right. Yeah.
And then I did want to touch on the emotional side of things. And Lisa, I'm going to kind of toss this over to you as far as, you know, I mean, I think it's good for providers to hear a conversation about this, and as well for other plus size women to know that they're not alone. So what are some of the things emotionally with your pregnancy that you've gone through that might be helpful to share?
I think that it's important for plus size moms to get educated, because I know that when I first was looking at getting pregnant and was first pregnant, you know, you read all these books and you read all these studies and you read all these statistics, and a lot of the statistics are, as I had said, you know, presented in such a way that it's, well, you have a, you know, fourfold risk of developing neural tube defects. Well, the actual risk for anyone else is well under 1%. So actually, a fourfold risk is still under 1%. Mm. And I think that once I started to do my own research, educate myself, it started to be less of a stressful thing. I think that it's really important for every mom to not be stressed out, not to let herself get to that point where she's just dealing with so much stress and anxiety and, you know, depression and whatever it is that she's dealing with. I think it's very important for plus size moms in general, moms in general, but plus size moms in particular, to really get educated about the actual things that are going on and what you can do to make things better. So, you know, instead of beating yourself up about eating that delicious cookie, you go for a walk, which can actually help reduce stress and make you healthier and stronger for when you're giving birth. And I think at first I had a lot of anxiety. And once I started to do a lot of research for myself and realized that I actually was pretty healthy for, you know, despite my BMI, and really start looking at what I could do and what I needed to do, it made me a lot less anxious. I also think that, you know, going to a doctor that's not going to belittle you or make you feel upset, it really makes a difference. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I have seen online, actually. If you start looking for a lot of plus size pregnancy things, there are a lot of doctors out there that just don't get it and don't understand that people can be healthy and people can deliver healthfully. And I think it's important for a plus size mom to have a good relationship with their doctor, because you don't want to feel bullied, you don't want to feel shamed, you shouldn't feel guilty for being your size. That's, you know, it's okay to be a different size than, you know, quote unquote normal. As long as you are being as healthy as you can for you and your baby, I think that's the important thing. So I think that being educated and really having a good relationship with the doctor and having a good support system in general are really important, because I know that once I started to really think about things in a different way rather than worrying about all the risks and feeling like there was no way for me to, you know, be healthy, then I realized that there are a lot of ways for me to be healthy. And there are tons of moms who have a BMI over 30 or over 25 or whatever, who have perfectly happy pregnancies, perfectly healthy pregnancies. And I think it's definitely something to focus on. I think it's good for moms to focus on being healthy and happy.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Kamali, for being here today on Preggy Pals. For more information about Dr. Kamali, you can visit the episode page on our website. Before we wrap today's show, here's some maternity fashion trends from Crystal Stubendeck of Borrow for Your Bump.
Hello, Preggy Pals. I am Crystal Studendeck, maternity fashion expert and founder of Borrow for Your Bump, where you can buy or rent maternity style for a monthly rate. Today we are going to talk about the perfect weekend getaway looks for moms-to-be. Fall is a time for cooler weather, back-to-school, football games, and fun weekend outings. This is the perfect chance to enjoy new looks by combining items already in your closet with some new styles that will work with your growing bump. For a city tour or even day errands, we love the look of a dark top with bright cropped skinny jeans. Color blocking is still a hot trend this fall, and it brings light and life to your already glowing face. Add a silk scarf and some colorful and comfy footwear. The country getaway is a relaxing escape, and your wardrobe should say so. Try a chic cotton or even denim blouse with rolled cuffs. For the bottom, add a pastel skirt or shorts and pair it with some comfy loafers. Bring along an oversized striped scarf, which can double as a wrap for breezy nights. If you are lucky enough to experience an island escape during the fall months, we love a simple wrap dress or anything in a fun print. A floral print is also fun, and fend off the sun with an airy wide-brimmed hat. Trade your cool heels for flip-flops, and don't forget the sunscreen. Every expecting mama deserves a spa trip. For spa wear, we love a clean look like a white sweater in a breathable cotton. Avoid your yoga or gym clothes and add some fun print or bright shorts and silk that will help you relax and set the mood. Don't forget your oversized shades to protect your fresh new face. Road trips are fun any time of year. For an American classic look, pair a striped tee with a skinny military cargo pant. We love anything with an edgy zipper detail. Some basic kid sneakers and a fedora hat pull the look together. Whatever your getaway, find more flattering styles at borrowforyourbump.com. Enter promo code PreggyPals at checkout to save 20% off your entire order. Thanks for listening to today's tips on weekend escapes, and be sure to listen to Preggy Pals for more great pregnancy tips.
That wraps up our show for today. For members of the Preggy Pals Club, this conversation continues as we explore what it's like for plus-size moms who are looking for maternity clothes. How does that work? Thanks for listening to Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.